Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Reed, and this is the Midland Reporter Telegram Weekend Edition for Saturday, September 16th, 2023. Is the Midland ISD bond a tax increase? As expected, speakers at the Midland County Republican Women's Luncheon didn't see eye to eye. At the end of the Midland ISD bond proposition language on the November 7th ballot, there is a line, quote, "This is a property tax increase," end quote. The language is there because House Bill 3, passed this legislative session, required school districts to include the line at the end of each proposition. As expected, speakers at the Midland County Republican Women's Lunch didn't see eye to eye as whether that language was applicable to the $1.4 billion bond Midland ISD is putting in front of its voters this fall. Stan Van Hooser, the chair of the pro-bond PAC Energize Midland Schools, offered the following statement. Quote, "A new state law requires all school bond referendum propositions to include ballot language that reads, quote, this is a property tax increase," end quote. Despite the language, passing this bond will not increase the MISD tax rate. In fact, due to the tax compression and homestead exemption increase, passing the $1.4 billion bond proposition will still result in a district tax rate reduction from 91 cents per $100 valuation to 88 cents per $100 valuation, end quote. Quote, "No tax rate increase," end quote, was part of Van Hooser's presentation to the Midland County Republican women, and it is stamped on campaign signs and literature. Tucker Durham, the chief financial officer for the district, reported earlier this month that the current Midland ISD tax rate is 91.48 cents per $100 valuation this fiscal year. On Tuesday, the school board will vote on a tax rate for the 2023-24 year that is 82.23 cents per $100 valuation. The reason for the drop is the tax compression approved by the Texas legislature, the expected homestead exemption increase that has to be approved by voters in November, and an increase in the district's interest and sinking INS rate. The Texas Comptroller states the interest and sinking INS tax rate is the tax rate levied by districts to pay for any bond debt that may have been issued to fund the construction of schools and facilities. The INS rate is currently 7.02 cents per $100 valuation. The board will vote to raise it to 16.28 cents per $100 valuation and create a total tax rate of 82.23 cents per $100 valuation. The benefit, according to the district, is to start paying off more debt related to previous bonds passed. Midland ISD Board President Tommy Bishop previously told the Reporter Telegram that increasing the INS tax rate, and therefore the total tax rate, allows money to stay in the district and save taxpayer money longer term. He also said the board would not consider raising the INS rate, and therefore the total tax rate, if there was not a bond coming up. Quote, "The situation we are in now, based on where our tax rate could be, is a win-win for community and the district on having the opportunity to raise the INS rate," end quote. Bishop said, quote, "Other than that, we wouldn't be having that conversation," end quote. The district estimates a total tax rate of 88.41 cents per $100 valuation if the bond passes. So technically, voters in November are voting to increase the rate from what the board is expected to approve next week. Midland ISD or the PAC couldn't provide a total tax rate should the bond fail. When asked about the bond language, quote, "This is a property tax increase," end quote, Rachel Walker, who provided an argument against the bond plan at the Midland County Republican Women's event, stated, quote, "For one, I'm glad that it's in there just so it can help to clarify, as I said in this speech, that this actually is an increase," end quote, Walker told the Reporter Telegram. Quote, "Just because you're not seeing an increased bill doesn't mean that an increase in the tax rate wasn't there. And I don't know what the exact number is, but the citizens of Midland will see a pretty substantial decrease in their tax bill from the school district because of this compression that we received from the state. And so if you don't pass the bond, you get a pretty decent savings," end quote. Note, Walker stated she did not represent Political Action Committee Midlanders for Excellence in Education, which opposes the bond, but was just a concerned resident. crude prices climb to highest level of the year. Crude prices climbed to their highest level of the year, fueled by continued news of tighter oil supplies as Saudi Arabia and Russia both cut output. It was the commodity's third straight weekly gain. West Texas Intermediate on the New York Mercantile Exchange rose 3 of 5 trading days, opening the week with a 22-cent drop that was quickly recovered Tuesday by a $1.55 jump. Prices crossed the $90 barrier Thursday by climbing $1.64 and ended the week rising 61 cents to close the week at $90.77 per barrel, up from $87.51 at last Friday's close. The posted price ended the week at $87.25, according to Plains All American. Natural gas prices posted a gain for the week, with Henry Hub futures trading in a narrow range on the NYMEX. The biggest jump was a 13.5-cent rise Tuesday that put prices over $2.70 per MCF, followed by a 6-cent fall Wednesday. Prices fell 6.4 cents Friday to end the week at $2.664 per MCF, up from $2.608 at last Friday's close. Reuters reports that oil futures are up 13% so far this year, after gaining about 7% last year, while natural gas futures have plunged about 41% so far this year, after rising about 20% last year. Quote, after a third week of gains, crude prices are not seeing the typical profit-taking as the short-term crude demand outlook gets a boost from improving U.S. and Chinese economic data, end quote. Edward Moya, senior market analyst, The Americas, at Oanda, wrote in his daily newsletter. He added that $100 oil is not that far away, quote, but that might not be a one-way trade, as short-term risks to the outlook could shift consumer views and attitudes. The oil market is going to stay tight a while longer, but we might need to see a fresh catalyst to send oil to triple digits, end quote. Tim Waterer, chief market analyst at KCM, agreed oil prices are showing no signs of letting up. Quote, the optimistic demand outlook from the IEA and the output constraints by OPEC Plus are driving momentum to the upside. If the U.S. dollar ever starts to cool down, then one starts to imagine that further gains could be in store for the oil market, end quote, he wrote in an email. The U.S. Energy Information Administration boosted its price outlook in its September short-term energy outlook based on expectations global oil inventories will decline by almost 500,000 barrels per day in the second half of 2023. This will cause oil prices to rise over the remainder of the year, the agency said in its outlook. The agency raised its forecast for Brent, the global benchmark, to an average $93 per barrel in the fourth quarter from less than $88 in its August outlook. Quote, we expect crude oil prices to rise as global oil inventories decrease through the end of this year, end quote, said EIA Administrator Joe DeCarolis. Quote, high oil prices combined with uncertain economic conditions could lessen global demand for petroleum products through 2024, end quote. Enverus Intelligence Research, a subsidiary of the energy-focused software as a service firm Enverus, reaffirming its call that Brent, the global benchmark, will reach $100 by the end of the year. EIR also forecasts that natural gas prices will remain range-bound between $2.50 and $3 per MMBTU for the remainder of the summer, rising to between $3 and $3.50 MMBTU for the winter. What's up with Midland? Centennial Park. Basin PBS Heritage Festival, September 30th. The Destination. Open Mic Night, September 21st. Friday Night Live, Von Tez, September 22nd. Tall City Blues Fest, September 23rd. Bring Your Own Blues Open Jam, September 28th. Friday Night Live, Last Child, September 29th. Earth, Body, and Soul. Walk-in Tara Reading every Tuesday. Walk-in Reiki Energy Clearing every Wednesday. Kitchen Witchery, September 29th. Horseshoe, Battleground Grappling, Saturday. Texas Battle Bowl Esports and Gaming Expo, September 29th through October 1st. Midland Community Theater, Rumors, Saturday and Sunday, September 22nd through 23rd, 29th through 30th. Momentum Bank Ballpark, Scotty McCreary, Saturday. Museum of the Southwest. Downtown Midland Farmers Market, Saturday, moving downtown, September 23rd. Septemberfest, September 29th through October 1st. The Tailgate. Party in the Permian every Thursday. Family Fun Day every Sunday. South Hall, Saturday. Dueling Piano, September 29th. Modern Pop-Up Market, September 30th. Tall City Brewing Company. Geeks Who Drink Trivia every Tuesday. Tall City Beer Run every Thursday. Carnival de Agua Fresca, Saturday. The Venue at Live Oak, Sarah Hobbs, September 28th. Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, live in concert, Wednesday. West Texas Winds Fall Recital, September 21st. Key of G Live, September 24th. The Book of Mormon, September 27th through 28th. Decor Drop takes the hassle out of home office decoration. Whether you're a parent, boss, teacher, or beyond, Decor Drop will take the hassle out of decorating your home or office. The 9-month-old Midland business has designers that compile every piece of party or seasonal decorations you need and conveniently ships them to your front door at an affordable price point. The owner of Decor Drop is Stephen Lowry, a born and raised Midlander who has been a franchisee of Great American Cookies, Marble Slab Creamery, and Pretzel Maker locations since 2010. The struggle of uniformly decorating his franchise locations for major holidays sparked the inspiration for Decor Drop. Quote, during COVID in 2020, we had 8 more franchise locations in DFW, Dallas-Fort Worth. So we had, I think at the time, 6 or 7 in West Texas and then 8 in DFW. And I was like, man, we got to figure this out because we're paying people to leave. Go to Dollar Tree, take $100, buy a bunch of stuff, bring it back, put it up, end quote, Lowry recalled. Initially, Decor Drop started testing their designs in Lowry's own franchises. It was a big hit amongst his general managers. Quote, we did that. GMs loved it. It was easy for them. Not a big deal. Everything just showed up in a box. So the concept is professional curated, well thought out designs. We go and make all the purchases, drop it in a box, and now we can ship it from coast to coast, end quote, he said. In its 9-month existence, Lowry said Decor Drop has shipped kits to customers in Washington State, New York, Dallas, Illinois, and a few other states. Decor Drop specializes in 3 core product lines. Seasonal decor boxes cater to businesses, providing a consistent and inviting atmosphere throughout the year. For residential customers, their porch boxes add seasonal flair to your home. Lastly, their party boxes are for any special occasion from birthdays, grand openings, graduations, and everything in between. Recently launched this month are Halloween porch and party kits. Each box comes with a photo of what the finished design should look like. Lowry said instructional manuals and videos will hopefully be the next addition to the consumer experience. Samantha Voss, Decor Drop's creative director, plays an integral role in designing and implementing Decor Drop's party designs. Decor Drop initially thought they would hire designers part-time on a season-by-season basis. Quote, our thought was we'll just get ladies part-time gigs who would love to do designs on the side. And we'll just always, for every holiday, we'll have 4 or 5 people compete and put designs together, and we'll pay them for it. And we'll use one of those designs to launch for the season, end quote, Lowry said. Voss's ability rose to the top. Quote, you could tell she was a pro at it, end quote, Lowry remarked. When Decor Drop launched, they were mainly focused on seasonal business decor. It was Voss who brought the idea of party boxes to the company. Quote, I worked at the Museum of the Southwest, end quote, Voss said. Quote, there I planned really large fundraisers like Septemberfest and things like that. There are a lot of design components to that too. So those were really large-scale parties. When I had kids, that was when I had to become very efficient at planning parties, end quote. Also on board with Decor Drop is 20-year marketing veteran Brooklyn Dixon. Dixon worked in event planning and marketing for Illinois-based Tentech Enterprises, formerly the Snyder Companies. Since moving to Midland, she's been working in social media marketing for several food and beverage stores in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Although she said she's put most of her focus and energy into Decor Drop since its launch in January, Dixon has led marketing efforts for children's book authors, politicians, and more around West Texas. All of Decor Drop's boxes are $125 for every party or seasonal decoration a customer would need. For customers within the region, Decor Drop offers installment services for an extra fee. Visit them online at https://decordrop.com. Community Roundup. Pet Resource Fair. Fix West Texas will have the Midland Pet Resource Fair, adoption event, and open house on Saturday at 5023 Princeton, Suite 17. The event is set for 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Quote, pay what you can afford, end quote, services will be available for those in need, free leashes, collars, pet food, adoptable pets, and more. Online, fixwesttexas.org. Richard Milburn Academy. The Richard Milburn Academy will have a public meeting to discuss the district's financial rating at 3:30 p.m. on September 26th. City's Free Microchip Clinic. Midland Animal Services is offering free microchip clinics through the end of September for cats and dogs. Clinic hours will be from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Tuesday through Friday and 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturday. No appointment is required. Upon your arrival at 1200 North Fairgrounds, park in the designated spots, 1 through 5, on the north end of the parking lot, and call 432-685-7420. Midland Animal Services staff will come to your car for check-in. Community Calendar. St. Anne's Family Fair and Carnival, September 28th through October 1st. National Night Out, October 3rd. Make a Difference Day, Annual Fall Community Cleanup, October 7th. 2023 WTX Women Professional Women's Symposium, October 11th through 12th. Senior Life Midland 34th Annual Texas Size Garage Sale, October 13th, 14th, 17th, and 19th. Pink in the Park, October 14th, Centennial Park. Reporter Telegram School Bond Forum, October 18th at Midland College. Midland Northside Lions Club's 20th Annual Family-Oriented Roar with Laughter Comedy/Variety Show, October 21st, Hispanic Cultural Center. LHS Dolls Annual Charity Golf Tournament, October 21st, Hogan Park. www.lhsdolls.com. Cruise for a Cause Car Show, October 28th, Horseshoe Pavilion. Quote, Love Comes First, An Evening with Jenna and Barbara Bush, end quote, November 7th, Petroleum Club. Regular events, Rescue Runners 8 to 10 a.m. first and third Saturdays, Midland Animal Shelter. Gentle Healing Yoga for Cancer-Impacted People, noon and 5:30 p.m. Monday, Yoga Sanctuary, 4202 Dawn Circle, 79707. One Bite at a Time's Cancer Support Groups, every second Tuesday of each month, 7 p.m. at 3813 North Midland Drive. Upcoming meetings. Planning and Zoning, 3:30 p.m. Monday, Council Chamber, City Hall, 300 North Lorain Street. Midland College, 4 p.m. Tuesday, Gibson Boardroom. Midland ISD, 5:30 p.m. Tuesday, Bowie Fine Arts Academy, 805 Elk Avenue. Important election dates, October 10th, last day to register to vote. October 18th, Reporter Telegram School Bond Forum at Midland College. October 23rd, first day of 2 weeks of early voting. October 27th, last day to apply for a ballot by mail. November 3rd, last day of early voting. November 7th, election day and last day to receive ballot by mail. Midland College to hold Constitution Day Monday. Midland College will commemorate the signing of the U.S. Constitution in 1787 on Monday. The celebration will include a voter registration table coordinated by the Midland League of Women Voters and a Constitution scavenger hunt coordinated by the Midland College Government Department. According to a press release from the college, students will begin the scavenger hunt at the Marie Hall Academic Building, where they will pick up a pocket constitution and their scavenger hunt, quote, passports, end quote. While there, they will also receive information about constitutional amendments for voting and elections, the press release states. A virtual tour of Constitution Hall will be available in room 105 of the Fasken Learning Resource Center library, where students will learn about the Founding Fathers and efforts of the Federalists and Anti-Federalists. Research guides will also be available, according to the press release. In the Scarborough Student Center's Title IX office, students will learn about due process amendments. Finally, at the Dolly Neal Chapel on the MC campus, a QR code will be available for students to scan and learn about freedom of religion and the Establishment Clause. Students must visit all areas and return their scavenger hunt passports to room 151 of the Marie Hall Academic Building by 1 p.m. to be eligible for prize drawings. Cooler, rainy conditions help with parched land. The rain in Midland and around the region has had an impact on the dry conditions, according to the Texas A&M Forest Service. The TAMFS uses the Keach-Byram Drought Index to determine forest fire potential. The drought index ranges from 0 to 800, where a drought index of 0 represents no moisture depletion, and an index of 800 represents absolutely dry conditions. At the beginning of the week, Midland's score was 713, which put Midland County close in a range, quote, often associated with more severe drought with increased wildfire occurrence, end quote. That score had dropped nearly 100 points to 616 by Friday afternoon. Midland's score is still within the highest range, 600 to 800, and still over the score used by Midland County officials needed to institute a burn ban, 575. But it does show improvement. The chance of rain continues Saturday. The National Weather Service also shows that temperatures are expected to increase into the 90s by Tuesday of next week. Those higher temperatures will continue through at least September 22nd. Friday's report, Friday's high 84 degrees, typical high for September 15th, 88 degrees. Friday's low 65 degrees, typical low for September 15th, 65 degrees. Previous record, high for September 15th, 100 degrees, set in 1965. Last 3 days, Wednesday 74 degrees, Thursday 85 degrees, Friday 84 degrees. Next 3 days, Saturday 80 degrees, Sunday 83 degrees, Monday 87 degrees. Rainfall, Friday 0.07 inch. This month, 0.43 inch. This year, 2.22 inches. Normal through September 15th, 10.17 inches. Upcoming rainfall chances, Saturday 50% during the day and 40% at night. Sunday 30% during the day. Source, National Weather Service. Life Tributes. Catherine Elaine Favor. Catherine Elaine Favor of Midland, Texas, passed away September 8, 2023, in Lubbock, Texas, following a lengthy illness. Kathy was born January 28, 1950, in Abilene, Texas, to parents Joe and Elaine Favor. Kathy was preceded in death by her husband, David Miller, her parents Joe and Elaine Favor, and a brother, Roger Favor. Kathy is survived by her brothers, Lindahl Favor and wife Ann of Littlefield, Texas, Terry Favor and wife Evelyn of Lubbock, Texas, and nieces and nephews Christy Scott, Cody Favor, Joel Favor, Shay Savage, Kelly Cronister, Trey Miller, James Miller, and Robin Miller. Belden Bud Clear. Belden Bud Clear of Midland, Texas, passed away peacefully on September 10, 2023. Bud was born in Frost, Texas in 1940 to Guy and Marie Clear. Bud was preceded in death by his brother, two sisters, mother and father, Dottie Clear, his son Eric Clear, and daughter Tracy Sturdivant. He is survived by his wife, Bobletta Clear, his children Shauna Bridgeforth, Brian Bridgeforth, Tanya Peel, Patrick Peel, and Shane Myers, Donna Myers. His grandchildren, Autumn Rush, Garrett Kessler, Juliana Kessler, Brianna and Braxton Bridgeforth, and Ethan and Seth Myers. His sister, Gloria Treadwell, and eight nephews and nieces. Services will be held at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home on September 16th at 10 o'clock a.m. Funeral service is under the direction of Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at llewellyngarciapipkinfh.com. Judith Sue McBroom Golden. It is with heavy hearts and profound sadness that we announce the passing of our beloved Judy Golden on September 13, 2023. Judy was born on February 6, 1940, in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, to Dallas and Ruby McBroom. She is survived by her sons, Marty Golden and his wife Elaine, David Golden and his wife Susie, as well as Greg Golden and his wife Julie. Judy was a Mimi to 10 grandchildren and 20 great-grandchildren that she was incredibly proud of. She was predeceased by son Barry Golden, her parents Ruby and Dallas McBroom, her siblings Leon McBroom, Eddie McBroom, and Gen Kidwell. The family will receive guests from 5 o'clock p.m. to 6 o'clock p.m. Sunday, September 17, 2023, at Nallie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. A funeral service to honor and remember Judy will be held at 12 o'clock noon, Monday, September 18, 2023, at Mid-Cities Church, 8700 Texas 191 in Midland. Paul Bear is in service. Dallas Golden, Jake Golden, Hunter Golden, Josh Masonheimer, Joshua Foley, Matt Kelton, Moises Duke, Josh Hartung, and Alec Prescott. Arrangements are under the direction of Nallie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory in Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Donald Lee Don Turner, Midland. Donald Lee Don Turner entered into eternal life on September 10, 2023, following an illness. Don was born December 12, 1929, near Shamrock in Wheeler County, Texas, to Thomas Jack Turner and Nona Pearl Alexander Turner. Don was preceded in death by his first wife, Mary Fay Hart Turner, daughter Vicky Towery Avila, daughter Rebecca Turner Whittle, son-in-law Junior Robertson, son-in-law Gary Gill, two brothers, and one sister. Survivors include his beloved wife of 40 years, Yvonne Turner, sons Dennis, Betty Turner, and Rick, Trish Towery, daughters Linda Robertson and Jackie, David Waldrip, son-in-law Larry Whittle, and sister Barbara, Harold Martin, along with 9 grandchildren, 16 great-grandchildren, and 6 great-great-grandchildren. Visitation will be Tuesday, September 19th from 5 to 8 p.m. at Ellis Funeral Home, 4616 North Big Spring, Midland, Texas, 79705. Services are Wednesday, September 20th at 2 p.m., also at Ellis, followed by interment at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Paula Ray Truex. Paula Ray Truex, 73, of Midland, passed away September 12, 2023. The family will receive guests from 2 o'clock p.m. to 4 o'clock p.m., Sunday, September 17, 2023, at Nallie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held at 10 o'clock a.m. Monday, September 18, 2023, at Westside Church of Christ, with interment following at Fairview Cemetery in Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nallie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. MPD investigates shots fired call in South Midland. The Midland Police Department is seeking information on a, quote, shots fired, end quote, call that occurred on September 10th in South Midland. Midland Crime Stoppers reported that the call happened at about 2:15 a.m. in the 1700 block of South Marshall. Evidence showed that multiple rounds were fired at a residence. Quote, the owners of the residence were in their bedroom and multiple rounds went through the window, nearly striking them, end quote, Midland Crime Stoppers said on a Facebook post. Crime Stoppers reported that the, quote, suspects left the area in an unknown direction in an unknown type of vehicle, end quote. If a person is the first to submit any information on the suspects and it leads to an arrest, he or she will be eligible for a cash reward. Call Midland Crime Stoppers at 694-TIPS or download the Crime Stoppers app, P3 Tips, and submit an anonymous mobile tip. No caller ID is ever used, and those providing information will remain anonymous. Reference MPD case number 230 910014. West Texas City becomes dumping ground for used wind turbine blades. A West Texas town has become a dumping spot for thousands of old wind turbine blades. It started in 2017 when a stack of blades was placed in the town of Sweetwater, about 45 minutes from Abilene. Each blade is between 150 and 200 feet in length, longer than the wing of an airplane, cut into thirds and stacked haphazardly on top of and next to its counterparts. 6 years later, the blades are taking up more than 30 acres on the west side of town. Another wind turbine graveyard south of town takes up about 10 acres. Global Fiberglass Solutions is behind the situation, buying dead turbine blades from energy companies and depositing 80% of them in Sweetwater. The company was founded in 2009 to address what it said was a lack of sustainable alternatives for non-degradable fiberglass. Quote, together with Composite Material and Engineering Center at Washington State University, we developed patented process for recycling fiberglass composites, end quote. The company says on its website, Global Fiberglass has said it hopes to shred the blades and use them in other industries from railroads to flooring. But it has struggled to secure funding to purchase the equipment needed to do that, resulting in the piles of blades lying idle in West Texas. Residents of Sweetwater, a city of nearly 11,000 people in Nolan County, say the stacks of blades pose a threat to children playing nearby and those bold enough to explore the makeshift maze. Stagnant pools of water inside the blades provide a breeding ground for mosquitoes, they say, and rattlesnakes find comfort under the shadows the tall piles cast. Outsiders could argue the wind turbine blade is one of the unofficial symbols of Sweetwater, because the surrounding county produces more wind energy than almost anywhere else on the planet. Since the late 1990s, the town's wind energy industry has fueled the local economy with turbine-related jobs and a boom for landowners whose property hosts them. Even the welcome sign greeting drivers into the town is printed on a wind turbine blade. As environmentally friendly wind energy is, decommissioned wind turbine blades are not. Burning a wind turbine blade emits pollutants. A diamond-encrusted industrial saw is allegedly needed to cut through the fiberglass that makes up a wind turbine blade. If left alone, the blade's fiber-enforced plastic will never break down. Texas leads U.S. rig count higher for second week. After snapping an eight-week losing streak, the U.S. rig count continued its upward climb, posting the steepest weekly increase since last November. Oilfield services firm Baker Hughes said Friday its weekly U.S. rig count, which it has released weekly since 1944, rose for a second week, climbing nine rigs to 641, the highest level since mid-August. Still, the count is 122 rigs, or 16% below the 763 reported last year. The number of rigs drilling for crude oil rose two rigs, the biggest weekly increase since April, to 515, 84 fewer rigs than the 599 rigs a year earlier. The number of rigs seeking natural gas surged eight rigs to 121, 41 fewer than the 162 drilling for natural gas last year. Texas led the nation in gains, jumping seven rigs to 317, 47 rigs fewer than the 364 rigs at work across the state last year. New Mexico fell to 102 and was the only producing state to see a decline. Colorado won, Utah won, and Wyoming won, joined Texas as producing states to see gains. The Permian Basin contributed to the gains, adding two rigs for 322 rigs at work throughout the region. That's 21 fewer than the 343 rigs reported the previous September. Lee County, New Mexico, remains the most active county in the Permian with 58 rigs, down three for the week and the steepest drop among Permian Basin counties. Eddy County, New Mexico, was second with 43 rigs, up one. Martin County reported 38 rigs, up two. Loving County and Reeves County each reported 28 rigs, down two for Loving and up three for Reeves, the biggest increase among Permian Basin counties for the week. Midland County dropped one rig for 27, followed by Ward County with 14 rigs for a second week. Glasscock and Reagan counties each reported 12 rigs, down one for Glasscock and unchanged for Reagan. Howard County added two rigs for 11 at work within county lines. Enverus Foundations, part of the Energy Focus software, as a service firm, Enverus, said its U.S. rig count reached 695 during the week ended September 13th, holding steady with the previous week's peak. The count is down by two rigs in the last month and down by 167 rigs, or 19% year over year. The Permian Basin added one rig to reach 299, while the Appalachian Basin also added one rig for 43 rigs. The Williston Basin and DJ Basin were flat week after week over week at 36 and 17 rigs. The Gulf Coast and the Anadarko Basin lost one rig each to land at 74 and 46. Midland unemployment holds steady at 2.8%. Labor markets across the Lone Star State showed stability, according to statistics released Friday by the Texas Workforce Commission. The commission said its Midland Metropolitan Statistical Area, MSA, which includes Midland and Martin counties, had an unemployment rate of 2.8% in August, unchanged from July and also from August 2022. Midland continues to report the state's lowest unemployment, followed by Amarillo at 3.6% and College Station, Bryan, and Odessa at 3.8% each. Quote, "This is a strong report," end quote, Willie Taylor, Chief Executive Officer of the Commission's Workforce Solutions Permian Basin Office, which oversees 17 West Texas counties. Speaking with the reporter Telegram by phone, Taylor pointed out that Midland's civilian labor force was at record levels, coming in at 115,843 in August, up slightly from 115,704 in July, but 6,001 more than the 109,842 reported last August. That year-over-year rise was strong growth, he said. The strong labor market has resulted in high wages, he continued. Wages in Midland's mining, logging, and construction sector, which includes oil and gas, exceeded $1.3 billion alone during the first quarter, he said. Those strong wages and available jobs continue to draw people to the community, Taylor added. He was upbeat about the high enrollments at the local colleges, University of Texas Permian Basin, Midland College, and Odessa College, saying that means the workforce pipeline continues to grow. Even so, Taylor continues to encourage everyone to upgrade their skills and contact his office if they need child care assistance. Quote, "I'm amazed at how we've managed to make this turnaround after COVID," end quote, he commented. Quote, "It's almost like a Cinderella story. It's been a strong ride, and we need to enjoy the ride," end quote. While Midland's civilian labor force continued to grow, so did the number of employed Midlanders, up to 112,561 from 112,409 in July, and a jump of 5,830 from the 106,731 employed last August. The number of unemployed Midlanders inched down to 3,282 from 3,295 in July, but is 171 more than the 3,111 unemployed last year. Midland's total non-farm job count dropped 100 from 120,600 in July to 120,500 in August. The government sector led with the addition of 300 new jobs as schools reopened for the fall semester. The mining, logging, and construction sector and other services sector each added 100 jobs. Those gains were offset, however, by the loss of 300 jobs in the professional and business services sector and by the loss of 100 jobs each in the manufacturing sector, trade, transportation and utility sector, and private education and health services sector. For the 12 months from August 2022 to August 2023, Midland has added 6,100 jobs, from 114,400 in August 2022 to 120,500 in August 2023, for a growth rate of 5.3%. Growth was led by mining, logging, and construction with 3,600 new jobs. Trade, transportation, and utilities followed with the creation of 700 new jobs. The private education and health services sector and other services sector each added 400 new jobs. The manufacturing sector, the leisure and hospitality sector, and government sector each added 300 jobs. Financial activities added 100 jobs. Statewide, the unemployment rate held at 4.1% for a fourth month. The state continued to set records for the number of jobs, number of people employed, and size of the civilian labor force. Total non-farm employment increased by 16,700 positions over the month to reach a 23rd consecutive series high level with 13,979,100 jobs and a 30th consecutive month of growth. Since August 2022, Lone Star State employment grew by 402,000 positions and continued to outpace the nation in the rate of annual employment growth. The number of employed persons grew by another 24,300 people over the month, raising the new record high to 14,489,000. The Texas seasonality-adjusted civilian labor force grew over the month by another 33,500 people, raising the total to 15,111,900 and marking another record high for the state. While Midland had the lowest unemployment, the highest was in McAllen, Edinburgh, Mission at 6.8%. Midland unemployment, January 2023, 2.7%, January 2022, 3.9%, February 2023, 3.0%, February 2022, 3.6%, March 2023, 2.6%, March 2022, 3.1%, April 2023, 2.3%, April 2022, 2.8%, May 2023, 2.6%, May 2022, 2.8%, June 2023, 2.6%, June 2022, 3.2%, July 2023, 2.9%, July 2022, 2.9%, August 2023, 2.8%, August 2022, 2.8%. Texas unemployment. Below are the preliminary unemployment rates across Texas for August. July numbers in parentheses. Midland 2.8, Amarillo 3.6, 3.6, College Station Bryan 3.8, 3.8, Odessa 3.8, 3.8, Abilene 3.9, 4.0, Austin Round Rock 3.9, 3.8, Lubbock 3.9, 4.1, San Angelo 4.1, 4.1, Waco 4.1, 4.2, Dallas Plano Irving 4.2, 4.2, Fort Worth Arlington 4.2, 4.1, Texarkana 4.2, 4.3, San Antonio New Braunfels 4.3, 4.2, Sherman Denison 4.3, 4.3, Tyler 4.3, 4.3, Wichita Falls 4.4, 4.5, Laredo 4.4, 4.6, Victoria 4.5, 4.5, Longview 4.8, 4.7, Houston, The Woodlands, Sugarland 4.9, 4.8, Corpus Christi 5.0, 5.0, Killeen, Temple 5.0, 5.0, El Paso 5.2, 5.1, Brownsville, Harlingen 6.0, 6.1, Beaumont, Port Arthur 6.7, 6.7, McAllen, Edinburgh, Mission 6.8, 7.0.
Good day, this is Glenn, and today I'm going to be reading from the Odessa American, September 17th, 2023 edition. On the front page says, New Choice Programs Director Finding Her Way at ECISD by Ruth Campbell. Amy Hosick, Ector County ISD's new Executive Director of Choice Programs, Access, and Support, is no stranger to West Texas. Born in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, her mother is from Abilene, so she spent a lot of time in Abilene, Midland, and Odessa. I went to grade school in Midland, and then I graduated high school in Hobbs, New Mexico, Hosick said. She earned her bachelor's degree from College of the Southwest, now University of the Southwest, in elementary education with an emphasis in mathematics. She earned a master's degree in educational leadership from Texas State University in San Marcos, and her doctorate in educational leadership from Texas Tech University. I have a passion and love for the Southwest. I love the big skies and the open plains. I remember taking my first Southwest literature course and Southwest art course. The time there really inspired me. So that's one piece of it. I really wanted to get back to the Southwest at this point in my career, and then also the opportunity to grow and learn through a great leader like Dr. Murray, Hossick said. Referring to Superintendent Scott Murray, she said he is known throughout the state as having very innovative and strategic programs and initiatives. I wanted to be a part of working for a superintendent who is aligned to state initiatives and learn as much as I could and help support the work. Only on the job since July, Hossick was Director of Strategic Evaluation Systems and Support, overseeing the Teacher Incentive Allotment Program at Waco ISD. Waco has about 14,000 students. In that position, Hossick got to reward the high-performing teachers in the district. Part of my job was collecting data on the teachers who were eligible, and I also helped build out the program so that more teachers could become eligible over time. And we were really proud that approximately 98% of our teachers in that district were eligible for TIA, Hossick said. She added that the city and the region is known for having really nice people. A lot of people will ask why someone moves here, and she tells them the people are great. Even in my interview, it was stated we may not have a lot to do in our area, like parks and lakes and things like that, but the people are what make this area so great. That makes you feel good. People are what make, I think, this region really special, Hossick said. She added that she always knew she wanted to go into education. My grandmother, on my mother's side, was a teacher in the Wiley School District in Abilene. She worked in Merkel and Wiley. I grew up helping her every August decorate her classroom. I just have really fond memories of when we would go to visit her in Abilene, Hossick said. During the holidays, if we were ever at grocery stores or at the mall or in public events, even at church, people would come up and say your grandmother was such an influence in my life. I had her as a teacher. I definitely think that made a big impact on me at an early age, so I always knew I wanted to go into a profession that gave back to the community. I always babysat. I did a lot of work with youth groups growing up and just knew I wanted to be a teacher, she added. The math specialty came about because she had some really inspirational math teachers, specifically in high school. Her teachers helped her realize that having a math background could help her, and it was something she should pursue because that subject came easily to her. When I was working on my education degree at College of the Southwest in Hobbs, I would substitute teach. When I went to middle school specifically, the students would tell me, "You teach math so great." So it gave me a lot of inspiration to become a math teacher, Hossick said. Starting as a middle school math teacher, Hossick worked her way up, although it was never her goal to go into administration. I never had a strong desire early on to be an administrator. I had a principal in Round Rock who was just a very dynamic principal and was a great role model. She pulled me inside and said, "Amy, I see leadership capabilities in you. A very strong desire to be a leader, and I want to help develop a view as a leader because we need strong, specifically middle school principals." I was reluctant at first, but she just kept pushing me. I helped her build out advisory programs. I helped her build master schedules. I was really involved in the school as a whole and was curious how school works, and so she was my inspiration, Hossick said. She added that it's opened a lot of doors for her to have a greater influence on families. "I applied for this job specifically because I believe in my heart that families should have choice and options that align to student interests. This particular job interests me because there already is this portfolio of choices that families have, and I want to be able to positively contribute to expanding that, helping support that, and getting to know what programs would align to workforce demands and the superintendent's strategic initiatives. I want to support that process, giving families choice," Hossick said. "We're looking at the possible expansion and growing some of those current programs that are in high demand," she added. "If the bond passes November 7th, there could be expanded opportunities for those in-demand programs." Because she's new, Hossick said she arranged tours of the campuses. "My first task will be to get out and walk the campuses with the principals so that I can see teaching and learning happening," Hossick said. Her next step will be to see what families want in terms of choice schools when applications open up, then working with principals to see where classrooms or seats can be added if there's a strong desire for a certain program. "That will be part of my job, is to do some analysis this fall and in the early spring on balancing capacity and families' desires for certain programs, and seeing if there is the possibility of expansion," Hossick said. Hossick has a son who is a sophomore at Texas A&M University. He is majoring in computer engineering. Associate Superintendent of Student and School Support, Alicia Siverson, said ECISD is fortunate to have a high-caliber leader like Hossick leading the Department of Choice, Schools, Access, and Support. In her 28 years in education, she served 13 years as both a middle school and high school principal in Austin ISD. During that time, she developed and launched an innovative choice middle school program that expanded to a high school program under her leadership. As you can imagine, this required a tremendous amount of community work to identify the needs in the school community in which she served. Middle school choice options are needed in this area, and Dr. Hosick has the skills and talents needed to change the landscape of choice for our families across every zip code in ECISD, Syverson said in a text message. Interim UTPB Engineering Dean has wide experience by Ruth Campbell. Just finding his desk, T. Dwayne McKay is getting adjusted to his new role as interim dean of the University of Texas Permian Basin College of Engineering. Before he arrived at UTPB, McKay had been doing consulting work based out of Jacksonville, Florida. Prior to that, he was at the Florida Institute of Technology in Melbourne, Florida, was in the Army, leaving as a first lieutenant, and worked for NASA. He was on active duty for training and was in the reserves for 18 years. McKay has been in higher education since 1986 when he and his wife left NASA after the Challenger explosion. He had been chief of propulsion at NASA, and his wife, Mary Helen, was a PhD metallurgical engineer. They knew people at the University of Tennessee, and both were hired there. He had been at NASA for 5 years, and Mary Helen had worked for NASA for about 20 years. Before that, he was at the Air Force Rocket Propulsion Lab in California. When he was getting out of the military, he got hired by a company that operated Arnold Engineering Development Center, a huge aeronautics development center. I was involved with wind tunnel design and testing engines, testing rocket systems and rocket designs, and just sort of made my way over, McKay said. He added that NASA was a very regimented organization. I worked at Marshall Space Flight Center, which is in Huntsville, Alabama. It was a very high-energy organization because we were launching vehicles, he said. When a vehicle sits on the pad, it's a very expensive proposition, about $3 million a day. That was back then, he added. I hope to at least be involved with some classes, whether I teach anything or not. In the last few years, I've been involved with a class or two in a variety of things like leadership and engineering and ethics and engineering, that type of thing, he said. McKay said he was a member of the registry, an interim placement firm for higher education. There is a national competitive search underway for the College of Engineering dean position. McKay has agreed to serve up to 2 years depending upon the eventual outcome of the search, according to UTPB. A native of Wynn, Arkansas, he earned all his degrees from Auburn University. I won a full scholarship that paid for either physics or engineering. I went to Auburn on the scholarship. If I wanted to go to college, I went in one of those things. I wanted to be a journalist, believe it or not. That was my goal. But when I got a free education, it was hard to turn down, McKay said. His bachelor's is in physics, his master's in aerospace engineering, and his doctorate is in aerospace engineering and applied mathematics. He was drawn to UTPB because President Sandra Woodley and the provost were so nice to chat with. Life is fairly short, and if you have pleasant people to work with and far, it makes life a lot nicer. I love engineering, and I've always been in the aerospace world, but I have an affinity for wind turbines and the energy environment in its own right, and this is sort of the energy environment of the United States, the Permian Basin. Always heard of it, but never been here, McKay said. He knew it was oil and gas country, but he didn't expect 50,000 operating wells. That's amazing, McKay said. This area produces 48% of the crude oil produced in the United States. He has several objectives while he's here, and one is to grow the university a little bit. Right now, they're going through reaccreditation for Accreditation Board for Engineering and Technology for two of their programs, and they're starting accreditation for two more. Petroleum and Mechanical Engineering are undergoing reaccreditation, and the ones going through accreditation are Electrical and Chemical Engineering. The accreditation process is pretty high on my list of things that need to get done, McKay said. The reaccreditation process will be conducted at the end of this semester, but there will still be a period of time before they get the results. Accreditation for the electrical and chemical engineering courses will be next fall. McKay said he is impressed with the faculty in the College of Engineering, although it is too small for the things that need to be accomplished. That's another thing on my list of things to do, and that is to hire some qualified faculty to supplement what we already have. That's high on my list also. I've met with most of them, and you know, it's between semesters, so there's several of them missing. But so far, I found them not only intelligent and really committed to the university, but delightful people, actually. I'm pleased with the faculty that are here, McKay said. He and his wife, Mary Helen, have 2 daughters and 4 granddaughters. One of their daughters passed away during the pandemic. Woodley said McKay is a great asset to the university and the region. He earned a Distinguished President Emeritus designation, which says so much about the impact he had at Florida Institute of Technology. His executive experience, in addition to the knowledge and experience in his discipline, provides UTPB with high-level strategic leadership in the interim. His appointment will allow us to take all the time needed to find the right fit going forward, she said in an email. TSTC Welding Technology students learn of industry needs in West Texas by Odessa American. Abilene, Texas State Technical College's welding technology students recently learned about the current demand for welders in West Texas. Three industry officials discussed the latest trends and needs of their businesses with students during a panel discussion hosted by TSTC's Career Services Department. The officials were Mark McCarty with GM Equipment of Oregon Incorporated, Stormy Mishnick of Easy Pack Bridgeport, and Brandon Thompson with PALCON Limited. This was a way for TSTC to show our students the needs in the fields they are currently studying with the people who are in that industry, Aaron Wilhite, TSTC's Career Services Director at the Abilene campus, said in a news release. The three TSTC industry partners agreed that there is a need for qualified welders around the state and nation. We do not have skilled welders walking through our doors, Mishnick said in the release. TSTC students are already way ahead of the curve when they come and apply for a job. Thompson said his company, which is located in Stephenville, seeks welders who exhibit professionalism. We are looking for someone who will be on time. We want someone who will be a leader and pay attention to what is going on around them, he said in the release. Those are good skills to have as a welder. McCarty agreed that it takes someone with initiative to succeed. You will be able to do a lot in this field if you put in the effort, he said. Thompson added that no one should be afraid to ask questions of their coworkers. You are only going to get better when you ask questions, he said. You want to have work done correctly the first time so you do not have to go back and redo anything. In addition to discussing their companies, the industry leaders talked about benefits, the application process, and types of welding tests that applicants will take during the interview process. When the topic of salary ranges was discussed, Mishnick said TSTC has produced several supervisors for his company, which is based in Breckenridge. I would say 10% of my staff are TSTC graduates from the Breckenridge campus, he said. Many of those students have worked their way up to management roles because of what they have shown at the shop. That goes back to what is being taught at TSTC. According to 1TOnline.org, welders can earn a yearly median salary of more than $48,000 in Texas. Welding jobs were expected to increase 23% between 2020 and 2030 in the state, according to the website. TSTC offers welding technology at each of its 10 campuses located throughout Texas. It is one of 9 programs at TSTC that have money-back guarantees. The college's commitment to participating students is simple. If they do not have a job in their field within 6 months of graduation, they will receive a full refund of their tuition. For more information on the money-back guarantee program, visit tstc.edu/mbg. For more information about TSTC, visit tstc.edu.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.